Soy Gold. How many plays have you done over the years?
Oh, many. Soy Gold.
Would you do another one? Should we do a play?
Soy Gold.
And put it up somewhere and do it as like a fundraiser someday?
That'd be great.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Welcome to the noon hour of As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. And we are, the rain has turned to big sloppy snow.
Yeah, that kind of happened rather suddenly.
It's not really sticking.
No, it's pretty mild yet, but.
But this is your hourly reminder that I'm going to steal from Jane that if your wipers are on, your lights should be on.
It's a state law.
And so we marched through our noon hour today at 12:30. Phoebe Petrovic is going to join us. And she's an investigative reporter for Wisconsin Watch. And her pieces from December are on policing pregnancy in Wisconsin and the amount of women, pregnant women, who are investigated and charged with harm to their unborn child, and all of the ramifications of what we know about substance abuse and it being a mental health issue, and that you can't, and that punitive measures don't necessarily improve their situation or systemically that situation. And so we're going to talk more about her pieces and also what medical professionals actually suggest in these scenarios for the second half of this half hour. But to kick off, while we were very excited about Biden's appearance in Wisconsin yesterday, we aired it live across the Civic Media Network. But while that was happening in Congress, Congress had three former Twitter executives. They had a hearing to really dig into how much the government and the FBI is influencing social media. And so
to pick on conservatives
yes, specifically. And there was a lot of good clips that came out of yesterday. But basically what I kind of sum this up, that the Republicans who are going after this are living in a very distorted world. They're not living in reality. And, you know, because yesterday they continued to push a factually unsupported narrative about the federal government secretly colluding with Twitter to censor the New York Post's Hunter Biden laptop story in 2020. Now, Twitter has admitted that they erred on censoring that story. There was no FBI collusion.
No FBI involvement in suppressing that story at all.
There is no real evidence to support that the FBI was working with Twitter. And yet, Republicans were unrelenting in peddling this to the public. And at Wednesday's hearing, they showed no regard for misinforming those who turned to them for accurate information, or the fact that they were smearing a private business and its former executives in the process. And so, and also it just seemed like to a certain extent, some of them just wanted to be angry that at one point they were either suspended or kicked off the platform. I think Lauren Boebert has something. Why did I get kicked off? Let's play that one.
Mr. Roth, Ms. Gatti, did either of you approve the shadow banning of my account at Lauren Boebert? Yes or no?
No, I did not.
Not to the best of my recollection.
Well, let me refresh your memory, because on March 12th, 2021, and Mr. Roth, I know you looked at it because Fascist Twitter 1.0 had a public interest exceptions policy, which means for members of Congress to be shadow banned, it had to go before you, Mr. Roth. So I'll ask again, did you shadow ban my account? Yes or no?
Again, not to the best of my recollection.
So the answer is, Mr. Roth, yes, you did. I found out last night from Twitter staff that you suppressed my account for this tweet. It's a freaking joke. about Hillary Clinton being angry that she couldn't rig her election. It's a joke. But in response, being the sinister overlords that you all are, you placed a 90-day account filter so I could not be found. And now we see here that Twitter staff said the visibility filter on my account excluded me from top searches, prevented notifications for non-followers, and much more. This is considered an aggressive visibility filter. You silenced members of Congress from communicating with their constituents. You silenced me from communicating with the American people over a freaking joke. Now, who the hell do you think that you are?
Yeah, it's like Festivus airing of grievances in Congress now.
We can look to Twitter employees.
We can look forward to this for the next 2 years. Who do you think you are?
I mean, it's just so despite, again, no evidence that came from yesterday that this is happening. It's just that there is a certain amount of Republicans who are married to pushing claims that Silicon Valley is intentionally and unjustly censoring conservative views, even when there are no facts to support that narrative. But what's ironic is the fact that in yesterday's hearing, what did get revealed is that Twitter did fall to Trump and changed its policies after it had concluded that he had broken their policies. Let's play the AOC clip.
I'd like to show you a tweet posted by former President Trump about my colleagues and I on July 14, 2019. It says in part, quote, "Why don't they go back and help fix the totally broken and crime-infested places from which they came? Then come back and show us how it's done. These places need your help badly. You can't leave fast enough. I'm sure that Nancy Pelosi would be very happy as quickly to work out free travel arrangements." A day or two after that, Donald Trump publicly incited, you know, violence at a rally, targeting four congresswomen, including myself, saying, "Go back to where you came from." Ms. Navarulli, as I understand it, you were the most senior member of Twitter's content moderation team, or a senior member of Twitter's content moderation team when this was posted. As part of your responsibilities, did you review this tweet?
Yes, it was my team's responsibility to review these tweets.
And what did you conclude?
My team, Ray, made the recommendation that for the first time, we find Donald Trump in violation of Twitter's policies and use the public interest interstitial.
For the first time?
Yes.
And at the time, Twitter's policy included a specific example when it came to banned abuse against immigrants, as they specifically included the phrase, "go back to your country" or "go back to where you came from," correct?
Yes, that was specifically included in the content moderation guidance as
and
an example.
You brought this up to the vice president of trust and safety, Del Harvey, correct?
I did, yes.
And she overrode your assessment, didn't she?
Yes, she did.
And something interesting happened after she overrode your assessment. A day or two later, Twitter seemed to have changed their policies, didn't they?
Yes, that trope, "go back to where you came from," was removed from the content moderation guidance as an example.
So Twitter changed their own policy after the president violated it in order to potentially accommodate his tweet?
Yes.
Thank you. So much for bias against right wing on Twitter.
She is equally sassy. I do understand why conservatives don't like her, but at least she uses a Socratic method to ask questions to get to her point versus just ranting and yelling. But to sum up what that line of question was, Trump broke policy. The head of content moderation, who was there yesterday, said, "We flagged this and it was overridden by my boss because it was Trump." And then the even better one, which we can't play, is what they tried to get the Chrissy Teigen tweet taken down. Chrissy Teigen, who is a potty mouth. I think she's been a lot quieter lately. Once, shockingly, we found out that she was a little bit of a mean girl and a little bit of a bully in her past. But it's only when she was bullying people that it was punching down. But when she was bullying Trump, it was pretty entertaining. But when Teigen called Trump a series of
profanities,
expletives.
Yes.
One starts with a P, one starts with an A, one starts with a B. I'll let you guess what she called him, or you could just Google it. The content the head of the content moderation who was testifying yesterday said she was told by the Trump White House that they contacted Twitter and demanded that it be removed. And so, strangely, the only things that feel like got proved yesterday was that, yes, Twitter has erred in their own back and forth, whether it was the Hunter Biden laptop, the Trump policies, but that they certainly have not done anything with the government, and that this is the burden of being a dominant social media platform, is the decisions around content moderation. But yet now today we're having another weaponization of the collusion between the government and social media and Hunter Biden's laptop, because Ron Johnson is testifying today. Do we know what time he's...
Been waiting for this moment.
He's been waiting for this moment. I have a great quote that we're going to read on the other side of the commercial.
And I have a great clip from Jamie Raskin and also from yesterday's Twitter hearings.
Do we have time?
No, we don't.
All right, so we'll play that on the other side of this segment as well, or in the next segment, because I think it's going to be interesting to see how this hearing with Ron Johnson testifying... I mean, we've seen how he reacts on the Sunday shows when he doesn't get his coddling. So it should be interesting to see what softballs are thrown to him today, what hardballs, what his batting average is going to be. If any hardballs. All right. Well, we will be right back with those clips. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Jane Matinair is on the board. Coming up in this next segment at 12:30, we're going to be talking about policing pregnancy in Wisconsin with Phoebe Petrovic from Wisconsin Watch. But just to round out our conversation from the Twitter hearings yesterday, Jamie Raskin had a good clip.
He kind of sums things up in under a minute. Take a listen.
In America, private media companies can decide what to publish or how to curate content however they want. If Twitter wants to have nothing but tweets commenting on New York Post articles run all day, it can do that. If it makes such tweets mentioning New York Post never see the light of day, they can do that too. That's what the First Amendment means. Twitter can ban Donald Trump for inciting violent insurrection against the union, as he was impeached by the House of Representatives and his 57 of 100 senators found he did. And it can also try to resurrect his political career. Elon Musk just purchased Twitter and therefore controls its editorial content. And among the first things he did was to fire some people, hire some people, denounce some prior decisions, and reinstate an unrepentant and still clearly lying Donald Trump to the platform. Those decisions, however heroic or imbecilic you think they might be, are protected by the First Amendment in the United States of America.
Indeed.
Just tiny little, you know, insignificant details about the First Amendment.
About the First Amendment.
Private companies.
It protects you from being persecuted and prosecuted for what you say. It does not entitle you to say whatever you want on social media platforms.
What I think is so hilarious about that Lauren Boebert clip that we played, they're all over other networks. They're all over media. They're on Fox. They're on Newsmax. They're on all, you know, they have their own podcasts. You're not being silenced.
I know.
Across the board. It's just not true.
Well, it was like when our senior senator wrote an op-ed for the Wall Street Journal and was about being censored.
And it was in the, so no one would publish it. His article was obviously squashed by being printed in the Wall Street Journal.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Ow. Ooh.
Who? So you're who is this Ron Johnson guy who we never hear from anymore?
At all.
Because people are censoring him. Well, yeah. Speaking of Ron Johnson, he is testifying today during a Republican-led hearing of the Congressional Subcommittee that's investigating the alleged weaponization of the government against Republicans. Aren't Republicans part of the government?
Yes.
Yes.
I believe so.
He plans to speak about the roadblocks he faced from government agencies during his investigation into President Joe Biden's son, his personal investigation, Hunter Biden, that concluded in 2020 while Johnson was the chair of the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs. And so I think who else is it's Chuck Grassley, former Democrat and former presidential candidate, Tulsi Gabbard. They're also testifying today. But I just love, this was a quote that was from a Johnson spokesperson, Corinne Day, that was in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, that it's just so dramatic. So I think it just primes what we're, some of the clips we'll be able to grab and play for tomorrow.
Yeah.
Quote, "For years, Senator Johnson has warned the public about the coordination between government agencies, Democrat members of Congress, and the liberal media to suppress and censor the truth. The senator has witnessed firsthand the lengths these entities will go to obstruct and discredit anyone who attempts to provide transparency and facts that run counter to the left-wing agenda. He looks forward to providing his testimony and perspective before the House Select Committee."
Yeah, we want the facts. We want the truth. Like when he admitted on microphone that Donald Trump lost in Wisconsin.
And how the, but also how the FBI set him up.
Right.
But that it's too. Not clear. This is Jim Jordan, who is the head of this subcommittee. It's unclear if any Democrats will get to question him.
Probably not.
But it's likely to center around his investigation with Grassley into Hunter Biden's ties to the Ukrainian energy company, Burisma.
Burisma.
Burisma. While Joe Biden was vice president.
And can I just say, if Hunter Biden did something wrong and illegal, good, then get him.
Totally.
I have no problems with that.
I completely agree. Like, this is, I think this is always the thing. It's the same thing with the documents, where it's like, if you broke a rule, you broke a rule, and we're not protecting you just because, I mean, because I don't really, it's just so interesting to think of, like, getting into the obsession that Ron Johnson has with this over more pressing issues. Like, I feel like we sit here every day and we try to balance bring enough fun and lighthearted stuff so it's not always so depressing. But, you know, the topic we're going to talk about in the next segment, pretty depressing. talking about tomorrow, the aging population we have in Wisconsin and the increasing amount of young people who are dying from homicides and opioid overdoses in Wisconsin. And then after that, we're going to talk about Emerald Bay because of the rising costs and their negotiated prices with their Medicare has to start kicking people out, has to start kicking
evicting
old people out who are on Medicare because of rising costs. Like, there's so many things that are so broken and so many people who are suffering unnecessarily that it's like, really? Is this the best use of our time?
The Republicans are doing this on behalf of the American people,
Kristen. Because we need to get to the truth.
We need Hunter Biden's dick pics. I know that's going to fix everything.
Trust will be restored when
yes.
we have that.
Yes.
All right. When we come back, Phoebe Petrovic from Wisconsin Watch will be here to talk about her article, her investigative piece on policing pregnancy. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin. To As Goes Wisconsin. I am your host, Kristen Bry. We got Jane Madnair on the board. No matter where you're listening, across the Civic Media Network or on the Civic Media app, which you can download wherever you get your apps, thank you for tuning in today. And a reminder that if you miss any part of today's show, you can always listen to it as a podcast wherever you find podcasts, and also on asgoeswisconsin.com/listen. And you can always join the conversation at 844-967-2789. And so, did you know, this is not such a fun fact, but did you know that Wisconsin's fetal protection law is one of the most punitive in the nation? And to me, when I read these articles, you know, we talk so much about in the wake of Wisconsin's criminal abortion ban, the debate about bodily autonomy, and reading this really brings up questions about bodily autonomy and a woman's body, especially before she even knows that she's pregnant. But here to talk about her really incredible investigative pieces that were published in Wisconsin Watch called Policing Pregnancy and Wisconsin's Law on Substance Use in Pregnancy is Wrong, Leading Doctors Say, is Phoebe Petrovic, who is an investigative reporter at Wisconsin Watch, and she focuses on threats to democracy and civic equality for women and LGBTQ people. Welcome to the show, Phoebe.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited to have you here because this is one of many pieces I've read of yours that are excellent, but we're going to focus on this one because of time. So I want to start by just the story that you open with in the first piece of Policing Pregnancy, because, you know, starting with the individual versus the numbers is always more powerful. But this story in particular kind of just feels like a gut punch. So the story you open with is of a young woman who is suffering from depression and fatigue. She was a cancer survivor, but she was also unemployed and uninsured and not even able to get on Badger Care yet. And unknowingly, she was in her second trimester when she found out that she was pregnant. And so she checked herself in for care. And while she did get that care, she was not allowed to check herself out because the county had requested a temporary physical custody under the Unborn Child Protection Act. Now, to me, that seems like a nightmare, considering in the scenario that you wrote for this specific case, she did not know that she was pregnant, and yet they claimed that she was intentionally harming her fetus. And then the rest of the story, which goes into depth of how much this Unborn Child Protection Act really targets low-income and vulnerable women in their pregnancies. And I had no idea this was happening. So I guess to start with, what is the Unborn Child Act?
So this is something that passed in 1997, sort of at the tail end of the crack epidemic and this hysteria over crack babies, quote unquote, where there was a lot of media panic about how children born to mothers who were using crack cocaine while they were pregnant were going to be doomed to lives of suffering, were going to be permanently brain damaged and all this, that, and the other, which has been totally scientifically debunked. They actually found that poverty can have a greater impact on your growth and development throughout your life than exposure, gestational exposure to cocaine or substances. But this law made a small change with a huge implication or consequence. So it added the word unborn to Wisconsin's child code. So it said that the Department of Children and Families could exercise jurisdiction over children and unborn children. And so we're the only state in the nation that has a law like this that specifically describes unborn children as zygotes, embryos, fetuses, up from the moment of conception or fertilization until birth. And so that gave DCF, which is sort of implemented on the ground through local child protective services, so CPS, it gave them the authority to surveil pregnant women, pregnant people, and investigate them and encourage them or force them to go to treatment if they are suspected of using drugs or alcohol. And this is something that sort of happens. We found that about 400 women a year are investigated under the auspices of this law. So that's more than one a day on average since 2007. But because this is at the CPS level, it's about intimate family stuff and pregnancy. And then if it goes to the courts, it goes to juvenile court, which is sealed. This is sort of happening almost in secret, that unless you or a family member is personally impacted by this law, you might not know it exists.
And so what I, the first thing that popped into my mind when I was reading this is this, it feels like the idea of innocent until proven guilty almost doesn't apply in these cases, in these investigations, as far as what is intentional, what is not intentional. When do pregnant people know that they're pregnant and can be investigated for this? And so what authority and how much leniency compared to other crimes is given for DCF in these cases?
Yeah, so the problem is that this law, or one of the problems is that this law has uses the probable cause standard. So there, and actually Wisconsin is one of five, I want to say there's four other states plus us that allow the DCF or the state to take physical custody of a pregnant person who is using drugs or alcohol or is suspected to. So we're one of only five in the nation that allow that, but every other state who does this has a higher legal standard. Ours is probable cause, which someone from Pregnancy Justice, which is an advocacy legal research organization, told me that that practically means that courts only need the suspicion of drug use in order to commit someone and to take away their civil liberties. So all of the other states have a clear and convincing standard of evidence. Ours is probable cause. So it's much lower.
Yeah.
And DCF, the documents they have that explain all of the evidence they need for screening in people, is basically the same for determining that they in fact need services. And one of the big problems with Wisconsin's law is that it doesn't really describe very well what this actually means. So Tammy Lacher, the woman we were speaking about, eventually took her case up to the federal court. And a judge tore the standard to shreds and said that, quote, this is no standard. It simply tells the county worker to collect information on a general topic. But all of these different CPS caseworkers are interpreting the standard differently. And it's all about like degrees, like severe habitual use to a severe degree. Like, well, what does that mean? No one can tell us. The state can't tell us. The statute doesn't tell us. And it's all sort of up to the discretion of an individual caseworker. And one of the problems with that is that we're going to bring our own biases to how we determine that. A well-off white woman is probably going to receive less scrutiny than a lower income woman of color.
We're talking to Phoebe Petrovic, who is a Wisconsin Watch investigative reporter, on her piece that was published back in December on policing pregnancy and the fact that Wisconsin is one of, if not the most punitive when it comes to substance abuse for pregnant people. And what is the extent of the ramifications for women who are investigated? Because there was one story in there where someone ended up in handcuffs, right? And did they go to jail?
Yeah, so we know of two women who have been incarcerated under this. There could be more, and it's impossible for us to know the whole scope because DCF doesn't collect that data or make that data publicly available, I should say. And when it gets to the court level, it's juvenile court because they're concerned about the fetus. So because it's a fetus or an unborn child, it happens in juvenile court, which is sealed. But Tammy Lacher ended up in jail, and she actually chose to go to jail. She checked herself in because the alternative for her was to go to treatment, inpatient treatment. And she says that she was told by CPS workers throughout this process that they were going to take her baby away, that she might go to treatment, but because she had put up a fuss, she might lose her child. And so she decided that to fight for her family, she needed to try to do that from jail. Jail is not typically a hygienic place for anyone, but especially not someone who's pregnant. And the big irony of this was that, you know, they were concerned that because they found unconfirmed positives of methamphetamines in her blood or urine and in her tests, they were concerned about the safety of her fetus. But by being incarcerated, she had to miss two prenatal appointments. She was so stressed that she thought she was having a miscarriage twice. And she says that someone told her at the jail, like, well, if you are, there's nothing we can do. And she was in solitary confinement for 36 hours in a room that was smeared with human feces and that was freezing cold. And it was not a healthy environment for her at all.
That just makes my stomach turn.
Okay. I'm going to derail things just slightly because this is really making me angry. Why aren't we spying now then on sperm? Should every man who impregnates a woman have his biology checked to see if he uses drugs, if he's drinking? What about the quality of the sperm? Spy on sperm. Spy on sperm.
Hashtag spy on sperm. That is so infuriating. And so I think what complicates this even more, because if I'm correct, Tammy's story is from 2014. Mm-hmm. So this very much predates the reality we're all living in now in Wisconsin, which is a criminal abortion ban. And how much does this Unborn Child Protection Act impact or change, could even whether it is or could change under a place where we no longer can get abortions?
Yeah. So the fear is, from people that I spoke to, including Tammy Lacher's attorney, who coincidentally she worked on this case with now Attorney General Josh Call. So Josh Call was on Tammy's legal team, which seems relevant to me. he's fighting the criminal abortion ban right now. I just lost my train of thought.
We were asking about what the fear is. Right. Yes.
Yeah. So her fear, Freya Bowen's fear, this attorney's fear, is that now there are women who might have sought abortions who might not get access to them now and are pregnant, who are forced to carry pregnancies to term that they otherwise would have chosen to terminate, and that they are going to be under heightened suspicion. And part of the problem with this law, or part of the reality of how it's enforced, is there aren't any mandatory reporters, but lots of lots of physicians and healthcare workers are under the misconception that they are obligated to report a positive drug or alcohol test if someone is pregnant to DCF or CPS. And they're not. The reality is that they're not obligated to report that. Healthcare workers, CPS, and law enforcement are the top three categories of people who refer women under this law to DCF or CPS for investigation. And so the fear is, and I have no way of knowing whether or not this has happened, but the fear is, you know, you end up in the ER, maybe you've had like a car accident or you've fallen and hit your head, and they will check you for drugs or alcohol, and they might also screen you for pregnancy, and then they find out you're pregnant and also have been using alcohol or drugs, and someone might just refer you on without realizing, you know, I didn't know I was pregnant, or I'm intending to travel outside of the state to terminate this, that, or the other.
Well, we have to go to our break, but when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about what experts say as far as how, if a person becomes pregnant and they are someone who's struggling with substance abuse, what the actual advised way to give them help, especially if they want to have the baby, because I don't think, like so many things, locking them up does not seem like the answer here, whether it's for deterring it or solving it. But our guest is Phoebe Petrovic from Wisconsin Watch. We're talking about policing pregnancy. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Get away from my car. Get away. Hey, Kitty J. Hey, Daryl Lee. Hey, Roscoe. Hey, Ice Bane, Jerry Jackson. Hey, Outlaw.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. We are talking to Phoebe Petrovic, who is an investigative reporter for Wisconsin Watch, which if you do not check out Wisconsin Watch's, like, go to their website, get their newsletter. The investigative and the reporting that you guys do over there is so excellent. We're actually having, I think Mario's coming on next week to talk about his pieces on Kiel. I think we also have the Bitcoin piece. And so the work you all do over there, I can't speak highly enough of, because it's in depth. It's on important topics that you don't necessarily always know that's going on, including how punitive Wisconsin is when it comes to people who are pregnant, who are also suffering from substance abuse. And so the question then becomes, as you said, it was a 90s era law, which, you know, I feel like the 90s was known for pretty punitive laws, as far as that's the way you fix things, is putting people in jail. But I would imagine that medical experts who are substance abuse professionals would say that's not necessarily how you should fix this problem. And so in the second piece that you wrote on this, it was actually talking to people who work with women, men, I mean, substance abuse experts. And so what is a more compassionate and efficient way to help people who are suffering from substance abuse who may become pregnant?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I just want to add, I totally forgot, one of the other fears of this is because the law says controlled substances or controlled substance analogs, in a system that is highly punitive, if there's someone who really wanted to refer you to CPS because you were using Sudafed and you were pregnant, that could happen. So that's one of the fears here too. It's not just about people who are suffering from traditional substance use disorder, but experts who treat people with substance use and who are OBGYNs told the state back in 1997 and still say today that one of the problems with this law is that it will deter people from getting help. And in fact, that has happened, where there was a woman who did not seek prenatal care afterwards because she had been incarcerated under this law. So experts say that to just remove the possibility that you could become incarcerated or lose your civil liberties and be civilly committed if you are using drugs and alcohol and are pregnant, because that's a huge deterrent from someone getting care. The people that I spoke to said that the most important thing to do, despite this law, is to not avoid treatment, to not delay getting treatment or attempt to hide your pregnancy, to begin prenatal care as soon as possible because it's safer for you and for your baby, but to try to be selective about whom you seek prenatal care from. So try to seek out medical providers who are experienced with caring for women with substance use during pregnancy. And to seek out specifically drug treatment programs or other women who have experienced this, who might have referrals. At this point, there isn't sort of a database or list of providers who are good and who are sensitive to this law. But I have sources who are working on that right now, trying to build that database. So that's a resource for people.
Because that was actually going to be my next question is, how many of those, because I mean, Wisconsin, this is a whole other topic, but Wisconsin's also suffering from a lack of doctors, and there's certain areas of there's entire counties that do not have an OBGYN. And so that is a different issue, let alone doctors who can help with pregnancy who are also substance abuse specialists. And so that will be a valuable resource. And so I guess the follow-up question from that, I think, one, what was the point where you wanted to investigate this and write this story? And I think, two, is there a follow-up coming? And did this open a can? Did this open Pandora's box to more stories?
Yeah. So I really wanted to cover this story in particular when thinking about when the Dobbs leak came down, and then when Dobbs came down, thinking about how reproductive rights and bodily autonomy would change in a post-Roe world. And I read this book by Michelle Brachter Goodwin, a law professor, I think at UCLA. I can't recommend highly enough. It's called Policing the Womb. And it's all about bodily autonomy and how the state restricts that. And I realized that there's this whole other realm, right? It's not just people who are pregnant who want to terminate their pregnancies, but there are women who want to keep their pregnancies, become mothers, have children, and the state infringes upon their rights as well. And so I realized that this law was in effect. It was briefly ruled unconstitutional, actually, but then because of a technicality is still in place. And so just couldn't believe that that was happening and wanted to dig into it and share that with people, because the only way, I think it's important that people know about it. And also the only way, save for the legislature to take action, for this to change is for a brave woman to come forward and challenge it as she's going through it, challenge it through the courts. Yeah, I mean, since the story published, we've been getting floods of tips of families who are experiencing this themselves, who have lost children, who've lost grandchildren. And one of the things I really want to dig into is we did a data analysis that found that Native American women in particular are disproportionately policed by DCF and CPS under this law. And that was corroborated by anecdotal reports from a public defender. And so I really want to dig into why that's the case and what effect that has on Wisconsin's Native American communities.
I prefaced this, I think, at the beginning. I was like, we're going to have a heavy topic, and it is heavy. And hats off as far as your emotional stamina to research and investigate this. And so I guess, as you said, just to quickly end, as far as you said, there the two options basically to fix this are for a brave woman to go through a court, like to file a lawsuit and try to go through the courts and get the law actually changed, or for our legislature to actually do something about it. Has there been any attempt or bills, even if they don't go anywhere, that you know of, to try to overturn this law through lawmakers?
So I do know that after the story came out, one of my sources, who's Dr. Charles Schauberger, he's one of the providers that women could go seek out. He sent it to his assemblyman, who said that this deserves a legislative study committee, but I have no idea whether or not that's gone forward. If he's listening, he should do that.
I want to share a real quick text from the 414. I know that if my wife wants to get any of my medical information, she has to go through a whole bunch of hoops. Whatever happens to women's medical privacy rights?
That is a very good point.
Yeah, we don't have them anymore.
Well, on that note, Phoebe Petrovic, thank you so much for thank you for writing these articles. Thank you for doing the reporting. And thank you for spending time with us today and breaking it down for us, because it's a really important story that deserves a lot of attention from all of us.
Thank you so much for having me and shining a light on this.
Absolutely. We'll have you back for either a continuation of this story or your next report. And so for us, that will wrap it up for the noon hour. When we come back, Dr. Mike will be here for the last time this season to fix your life and your lineup. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Me.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.